We're back to the Neil Haley Show, and I'm excited first to welcome my co-host, David Hollenbeck of Hollenbeck Leadership. David, how are you? I know you're excited about our guest, and again, I was giving him problems because he never picks the Steelers every year to go to the Super Bowl, but David, thanks for stopping by.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me.
All right, we've got Sean Salisbury. Everyone knows him. NFL analyst. Remember in the days, ESPN, everything. Now with the Believe Podcast Network for the podcast. Sean, thanks for stopping by. And did you ever think, you know, with your career in the NFL, because we all know and how well you played in the pros and also college, that you would be so well known as an NFL analyst? You're like one that you look in that list of NFL analysts throughout the years that you would be so well known that everyone knows your name a lot of ways. Did you think that would happen for you?
Well, you hope, Neil, and thank you for having me on. Dave, it's great to see you. I appreciate you guys, and I'm always humbled when somebody has me on because I, you know, my mother, when she was alive, I still had to take the trash out at home, so I'm not even a household name in my own home. But yeah, you know what? You go. It's strange. You know, when people see all those years you play football, and you say, okay, somebody can talk to you about football, or all the years you're doing something else, an analyst. I mean, they do always remind everybody, you and John Clayton. I probably get that more in airports, you know, on four downs than anything we've ever done. I guess growing up, you know, my dad said, you're going to make it with your mouth and your right arm. You'll put that brain together. You don't want to do what I do. And he was a blue collar construction worker. So I never thought about it, Neil, to be honest with you, in the career. I was never in it. And maybe that helped to, I hope somebody recognized me walk the airport. I always took it as a compliment because it meant that I was doing good work. Now, not everybody that walked through the airport like you, like if I didn't pick your Steelers, not everybody liked what I had to say, but that's okay. I never made it personal. I tried to be fair to the player and not talk under the expert or over the person who may not have ever watched football. And I was always just, I like to say prepared my ass off, but I was fair and honest and transparent, but opinionated. That's what they paid me to do. So it's truth with my football career. You know, you always wish that I'd have won five Super Bowls and I'd have been a career like Big Ben or Tom Brady, but it didn't happen. I was able to play 10 years. And I guess the reason why people do is when I was on TV 12 years, it felt like every day, probably people got like, I'm tired of seeing this cat on TV, but I worked at it. And I think I was respectful. And when you've played it, but also respectful of the players, but also not afraid to criticize or compliment. I always, guys, and I'll just tell you this real quick. When I went on television, this is honest to God truth, from the day one, I had my boss tell me something I don't know, and you don't have to get everything in one show because NFL Live was 5 days a week. And so my goal was to just try to be great at it, good first and great, and get a clue and learn from Dan Patrick and Stuart Scott and Rich Eisen and Mike Tirico, the best of the best, on how to do television, the mechanics, because I knew I would always be prepared. And so when they put you on there and the boss said, tell me something I don't know and you don't have to get it all in. And I learned a great deal that day to just look into the camera and pound hard one or two topics. And it worked. But I never went in thinking I got to do this to be popular. I did it to be good. And every single show for 12 years I went on, and this is, I promise you, as I'm sitting here, my first thought was, if Bill Belichick is watching, what would he say? And that's truth. In my mind, I wanted to know whether he was or wasn't. Was I saying something where he'd say, that guy's full of crap? Or, okay, now he knows. Because I said, well, if you want to play quarterback, you want to be Brady. If you want to be coach, if it's now, you want Andy Reid or you want Bill Belichick. You want to make sure that those guys. And then I always wanted to teach that if somebody that was watching for the first time tuned in, would I be able to teach them something? So, but to make a great question too long, I never thought about being more popular in any of it. I wanted to be good. And it turns out when you're in a coat and tie on TV every day, you seem to get noticed more than you do behind a helmet. Plus, I was probably a little bit better at talking it than throwing it. So I understand that.
Well, but it's great to continue to have that career life after football. And so many people have those problems. Go ahead, David.
Right,
what
sure.
Do you want to ask Sean before we go into the Believe podcast? Because we have a short time with him. But go ahead, David, with your question.
No, the one question that came up as you were talking was, you know, through your career, you've held these leadership positions, you know, being quarterback in your college career and the NFL. And then now you're in a role where you're passing on knowledge. Through your career, you've had to pick up bits of wisdom. What is one piece of wisdom that you've made your own and passed on to others?
A lot of them. And you'll look, Dave, behind me, and I can't see it. I'm getting my office, but about 30 or book of the books behind me are all leadership books, books I've learned. And you guys know this, Neil and Dave, you take something good from somebody all the time. You know, a guy, this is good. This is great. Five of those pieces. And then you learn what you'd like to like get the clutter out. Right. I guess, you know, first off, I'm going to tell you the greatest advice I ever got when interviewing people. And I think that's a great, you know, we do it all the time on our shows, right, guys? No matter what how to get people to feel comfortable. And there is an art to it that we still try to master. And I believe Dan Patrick's the best interviewer I've ever
had. I learned so much from Dan Patrick. So it's an honor to say that. I'm going to go back to you and we'll go back and forth just because, man, I learned from Mike Golic, Dan Patrick, morning show. I never thought I'd be sitting here talking to Sean Salisbury. Well, I did not. And I never thought I'd get the chance to interview Mike Golic, which I got to. And I
said, we should be talking to you and saying, what do you, you're do a great job. So we're honored to be on with you. So,
but I mean, I just learned from you guys. I sat and work doing a job I didn't like, listening to all you guys on the radio or on television and saying, and I just created my own thing, but I never thought that would happen. So someday, and I have dreams beyond dreams, but you're right. You pick up those different wisdom, but go ahead, go back.
And we still, and I'm with you. I'm the same way. I still think like a kid, like I want to learn from that. And here at my age, I still believe that the best part of my career is still in front of me because while we all talk, I learned a long time ago that to have two ears and one mouth and when smarter people are talking to use them accordingly. But Dave, I love the question and I think about it all the time. And when it comes to the interview part, I remember I was doing an interview with Dan when I was doing his show, he and Rob Dibble and I. And I asked a question because it was in my infancy of this career. Normally it's used to being asked the question. And I asked the question and it was too long. I didn't know it was too long. And you ask the question and then you try to tell the person you're interviewing what you know. And then you re-ask the question. So we got done and Dan and I went and Dan took me aside. He goes, let me give you a little. And as only Dan can, and he's one of my best friends in the world as we developed that relationship. But he said, listen, he goes, you have a guest on for a reason. He goes, think about the questions of why, how, when. He goes, sometimes that's the best response. So he goes, you don't have to tell everybody we got the guest on. You can talk about it when the guest is done. We go back and talk. Utilize it. Get as many questions as you can. So I learned to be very minimalist in interviewing. Like in a game, you watch Pat Summerall. Summerall was so good at just down and distance, the play, Madden went crazy, you know, did his thing. And I watched Dan, and Dan has a way of getting a guy comfortable early, asking him a question that's not four questions in one and going, you know, belaboring a point. He asks the question, the guy answers it, Dan retees. And the key is Dan listens during an interview. And so I learned instead of write 40 questions down, which I don't write them down anymore, the initial one. And then I'm feeding off a guy and say, okay, because you miss too much. If you're too worried about the next one, you miss out on what you may be pouncing on. So I learned to interview, and I'm not good at much, but I've learned to be a good interviewer because the guy I have on, he's a guest for a reason. And Dan, there will not be a better sports interviewer than Dan Patrick. There may be a lot that are, there's a lot that are really good. So that's one piece of wisdom. And I guess for me that knowing that I wasn't a first round draft pick in this business, how was I going to carve it to where I was looked at as a first round analyst or a first rate analyst? I had been whatever you'd control, what I can control in my preparation and in my opinion. And if you're afraid in this business to give a strong opinion, then you will wilt and go away and never make it personal. So those things I've applied, and these books behind me, there's a quote here or this. And I always learned that if you're going to be a great leader, don't tell them how to do it. Show them first. Yeah. And I've tried to do that. And in the second part of it, I think that it's important that I've learned how to manage tasks and lead people. And there is a difference. I don't manage people. I manage tasks and lead people. So it comes from different areas, but I think I probably learned more about the business just watching and listening to Dan and tough love from Dan. And then the analyst part, watching great analysts that pound it, do it, and get it done right. And you take something good from everybody. And I know there's a lot smarter people in the room than me. So it's been a great benefit for my career.
I mean, you worked with so many different people at ESPN, Sean. I mean, you met, I couldn't imagine being in Connecticut. And who you've met and what celebrities and what huge, huge superstars, which I consider you like one of those people when you mentioned that name. What when you talked about leadership, what leaders are you learning from? And are you looking to try to carve out some of these leaders and be your next part of your career, speaking and motivating people? Are you on that route, like a Lou Holtz or different things of how some of these people, what they've done? What leaders are you reading books from, and where do you see yourself going?
I appreciate that. And yes, it real quick, it is. But think about the gauntlet of talent that I was for 12 years.
Man.
Dan, Mike Golick, Mike Greenberg, Stuart Scott, Rich Eisen, Michael Irvin was there, Mike Golick, Mark Schlereth. It's Kenny Mayne, John Butchigross, John Anderson, Carl Ravitch. I mean, it is, quite frankly, it's an embarrassment of riches in talent. Susie Kalber, Linda Cohn, both Hall of Famers in my mind. I mean, it goes on, and it doesn't stop there. The people behind the scenes that pushed you and put you in position to be successful, like the intern or the production assistant who sprints down the hallway to make sure the highlight is ready for you and doesn't get mentioned unless you take them to dinner, and in truth is going to own and run their own business someday and be a star. I can tell you the talent that I ran across in that building was not only in front of the camera, behind it was off the charts. And as far as, you know, great, I'm a Stephen Covey, and I read them all, whether it's The Best Year Ever, whether it's The Mind of a Leader, Trust and Inspire by Stephen Covey's son, which is one of the best books I've ever read. Leaders Eat Last by I read them all. They're not just there. You know how you get it? You open up, you got a briefcase and there's a sandwich in it. I do read them all. And I just got my master's degree at 59 years old from Texas A&M last December.
Oh, congrats.
I promised my mother and father that I was going to go get, and it's in the, you know, sport management division. I promised my mom and dad at USC's graduation, I was going back to get my master's. I finished it in a little more than a year and a half. Both of them have passed away. My mother was alive when I started it. And so I got that. And that goes back to Dave, what you're talking about, Neil, about leadership and taking something. So yes, I actually, the next part of my career, would love to write a feel good book about how to hit rock bottom and bounce back up and take something from leaders. But for me, public speaking, I would love to be in a speaker's bureau where I go around doing 40 of those a year.
I have no idea why you've not done it yet.
Between coaching quarterbacks and this, I want to, and I haven't pushed it enough, but now with this, I don't know, I guess a master's degree, maybe people think I'm smarter, but I'm not, I just worked at it. So hopefully I can apply it, but that is the next level. I've been fortunate to do great, you know, TV and radio and still doing it and able to teach quarterbacks and train them. But yeah. I have a burning desire and a yearning to go and stand it. And I've done, you know, some Fortune 500 speeches as a player and early on at ESPN, but I am so committed to learning and teaching now again that I would love to start doing it. And hopefully there's a step there, that the next step where it's a consistent thing, not just, you know, 8 of them a year.
I would love to help you. We're going to definitely talk off air. Carl Mecklenburg is the best at this. He does a phenomenal job at it. But again, I think you should go on Gary V's show, and that would get you even more knowledge now with the younger generation. And Gary V would talk about the Jets. You need to reach out to him.
I'm all in. Fair enough.
I'm not
too proud to beg, brother. I'm not too proud to beg.
All right, David, next question. I let our last guest, who's an Emmy Award music guy, coming on next. But let's go, David, with one more question before we talk about the Believe Podcast Network with Sean. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, my next question was about the podcast, you know, how he ended up. Well, I'll just ask, how did you end up doing a podcast, and what do you like more, being in front of the camera or, you know, hosting a podcast show?
I've bowled that over a lot. I think we all like, as we joke around when we were at ESPN, we say, man, we got to have the moneymaker on TV, right? When in truth, it's not much of a moneymaker. But I loved the urgency of live television, Dave. Loved it. Where the lights, I can, real quick story, on Monday Night Countdown, sitting in, Chris Berman, as we know, one of the guys, a legend. And to show you how good he is, I can remember we were getting ready to do Monday Night Countdown, and I was there. It was in the middle of my career at ESPN, and the director's in my ear says, Sean, is Boomer in studio yet? And on a live show, when it says 6 o'clock, it doesn't mean 6:01, right? We're going it live, and it ends at the right time. And I said, no, he's not in yet. He'll be here. I said, you know, he'll be here. And Boomer, you know, the tie's to the right and he's putting the jacket on and you're like, he's frazzled. He's going and talking fast. And you're like, but this guy is such a stud. So I sit there and watch, and it gets down the count. Now we're inside of 30 seconds and we're doing Monday Night Countdown Live. And then it's to 15. Sean, is he in studio? No. And boom, door pops open and Boomer comes in. He's fixing up his tie, comes and set, and they're going 10, 9, sets his scripts down and fixes it, puts his earpiece in, you know, and he's talking and getting ready. And 3, 2, and all of a sudden, like he'd been sitting in the chair for an hour, ready to stare at the camera, goes, it's a special Thursday night edition of Monday Night Football, the Raiders. My point is, he jumped right in as if he didn't miss a beat, right? So some of us sat in that chair for 10 minutes, and a guy like that pops in and gets you rolling. So I love the urgency of live TV like that, like, yeah. Damn, Boomer. And then, bam, he goes and wins, and he's as good as it's ever been at that network. The urgency of live TV and to be on time and to look into the camera without having to think about it. That's one. I like the long form and be able to explain where it's not a 30-second or 60-second segment. Too. So that's how I got it, you know, podcasting, and that's the wave. And people want it in quick bursts now, which is becoming more urgent. But I like the ability to talk all sports. I actually like baseball and basketball more than football. So a podcast has also created the ability for me to study and try to be expertise in other sports that I loved more playing and I loved more talking about, and football is what I do. So I would say podcasting and radio first, although I'm not going to turn down an opportunity to, you know, go on there and battle with Stephen A. Smith for a couple hours on one of those shows, which would be great in the morning. I love the debate part of sports on television. I love the long form, fans involved and the being able to dive into a topic and talk about it for 2 straight hours without interruption. I do like that.
All right. Well, fantastic. People could check out your podcast again at Bleace Podcast Network. Do you have a website and stuff people can check you out?
You know what? They can go to Sean Unfiltered on Twitter and you can find me. I'm pretty simple and not a lot of high maintenance, and obviously catch me on Believe. And I am now the president of, I want you to get this new app. It's called PSF, Pro Sports Fans. It is the best fan-friendly app in the country, and it is coming. And it is fast and furious, and you're going to love it. Go get it, PSF. It's free, and you're going to love it. So I was named the president of that in January, and we've just kicked it off for baseball season, and football season is going to be unreal. Go check it out, guys. I'd love you to get on.
All right. We definitely will. All right, you're listening and watching The Neil Haley Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.